Accession number 12951, Reel 3.
Mr. Collins, Reel 3. And were all the personnel in the hospital Italian, or did they also have Germans?
The medical staff were all Italian.
So you didn't see any Germans?
I did. The Germans used to come in. Because for some unknown, well, some reason, flying personnel were supposed to be the responsibility of the Germans, wherever they were captured. If you were in the ground forces, it didn't matter who captured you, you were a prisoner of the Italians. I think there must have been some sort of an agreement like this, because the German colonel used to come in to see if I was all right. And when he saw my foot one day, he said, you know, we ought to do something about that. You'd get better treatment in Germany. Would you like to come to Germany? And I said, well, yes, if it's going to be better. All right, he said, we'll arrange it. Well, it so happened that I was going to be taken to Italy on the hospital ship. And some German chap came along and he said, look, when we get to Naples, we will take you off the ship and you'll be taken straight to Germany. Oh, well, that's all right. But I don't know whether somebody must have told the Italians and they would have lost a bit of face if they'd been lost one of their prisoners. So when the ship docked at Naples, I was taken off straight away on a stretcher and taken round the back of some warehouse and laid down on the ground with an Italian soldier standing over me with a rifle in pouring rain. And I was there, well, I don't think it was all day, but it was an awful long time. And so I never even got to Germany. And I was then put in an ambulance and taken to Caserta. But I think it was, you know, somebody made a muck of something somewhere. Because I was hoping to get to Germany, having been promised that I would get, you know, excellent treatment. But it didn't happen.
You were telling me earlier, off the record, that they tried to get some information from you.
Yes, this was when, in Tripoli, after a Wellington got shot down, and they found the observer's logbook, and in it was written, I switched the IFF off. And they wanted to know what the IFF was. Well, I did know what it was, but I knew also that it was secret. So I told them all sorts of yarns about not knowing what it was. And unfortunately, by way of getting rid of the chap, I said, oh, I don't know what it was. Perhaps he cooked his log, meaning he put something in it for some reason. And he said, but there was no stove in the aircraft. It was a stupid thing for me to say, because the following night the chap came back again and said, this cooking business, will you tell me more about it? But I was just kept on stalling, and in the end they gave up. But I think they must have got some idea of what it was, I don't know.
You should say that IFF is identification friend or foe.
Yes. Mm.
Any other interrogations you've had?
No, I don't think so. No, I can't remember anything that was... And apart from the normal sort of questions on where were you, and the usual one that said, well, if you don't tell us where you came from, you won't be able to send any letters home. Obviously, I thought, well, there's no point in not telling them my home address. But they had no idea what squadron we were or anything like that. I mean... But after a while, because I could speak Italian and I was, I suppose, able, I used to have to fill in the forms for people who came, who were captured. You know, we had a, they had a form to fill in, name, address, and what have you. And I remember one chap must have thought I was a stool pigeon because absolutely flatly refused to tell me anything. And I said, well, look, you know, it's no good. You just got to say where you live because it's not going to help anything to anybody. And I know this number rank, name, rank, number business is all you're supposed to say, but it's no, not going to help things if you don't put your home address on. And those sort of things. And I did that. I mean, I didn't think there was any harm in it.
So when you got to Italy, you went to Caserta?
Into Caserta. We were there for 8 weeks. And there wasn't, I didn't have any treatment at all then. My wounds were healing. My stump was weeping a bit, but they used to dress it every now and again. But didn't worry me. And then we moved up to Parma, which is in the north, near Bologna. And we were in a we're actually in a school, which was converted to a hospital, I suppose. It was attached to the military hospital in Parma, across a courtyard. And but we were, I don't know how many were there, we were about 150 people, I suppose, in the school in Parma. And we were just, you know, there. We were jolly hungry for the first 2 or 3 months because we had no Red Cross parcels and it was jolly cold. But the Red Cross parcels started to come through. And, I mean, we were in a, the NCOs were in a room, 12 of us. There were, I think, 5 RAF, the others were Army, and we just all got on very well together. In fact, those of us that are still alive keep in touch.
What was the name of this place?
It was Scuola Angelo Massa. S-C-U-O-L-O-A-N-G. Well, you know how to spell it. Angelo Massa. I don't know where on earth it was in Parma. Can't tell you.
And you eventually got repatriation?
That's right.
How did that come about?
Well, the Red Cross Commission came to Parma, I can't remember when, but interviewed everybody who was likely to be repatriated. Severely wounded, I suppose. And you know, I was a dead cert, having one leg and the other one not much good. And so I didn't have any worries. Some of the chaps, of course, were a bit worried because they didn't know whether they would make it or whether they wouldn't. And one bloke was repatriated because he'd had a rugger injury before the war. And his knee was a bit wobbly. So he played on it and borrowed my crutches to go across to the Red Cross Commission and came home. Unfortunately, he was in the Australian Air Force, went back flying, and was killed soon afterwards. We came and we were all taken down to Lucca.
In Malta?
No, sorry, the Lucca in Italy. Lucca, which is near Pisa, I think. Yes. Puccini came from Lucca. And we all assembled there and we got on a train from Lucca and came round to Lisbon, which took a week, which was an absolutely fantastic journey. Really was. Super. Right through France. We changed trains at the Franco-Spanish frontier because the gauge is different in Spain. And we were put onto Wagon Lee at the border, and that was absolutely superb. Comfort. Marvellous. And we got to Lisbon, and we were taken to a reception in the customs shed, and then we went across to the ship, hospital ship, Newfoundland, and another week we were home.
Whilst you were in Italy, did you get any impression of the Italian conduct of the war and their attitude towards the war?
I think the biggest worry for the Italians was that they might be sent to the Russian front. But don't forget, I was really only with a fairly backline sort of personnel. One incident that occurred in Parma was that when the sergeant came round with the food for the guards, they had a big dustbin thing on with macaroni in water or soup, whatever it was, and they wheeled it into the courtyard to dish it out to the Italian blokes. And one of the soldiers said he didn't like the food or something, and the sergeant told him he'd got to eat it, so the soldier shot him. Shot the sergeant. And that was, I suppose, the most exciting incident. I mean, he killed him.
You saw it happen?
I didn't see it happen. We weren't allowed out when things were like that. But, oh no, some of the chaps did. Because in Italy, they used to have slogans painted on walls. And the one... always remember there was one not far from, we could see it, and it was molte morte, molte onore, you know, many dead, much honour. And I remember that one of our chaps said molte morte, molte buono. In other words, you know, lots of dead, jolly good, especially if they were Italians. But we didn't have an awful lot. I mean, they used to come round with the food. Orderlies, Piantonis. There was a lieutenant there who used to lose his temper quite often, and a colonel who also used to lose his temper. One day they came into our room, and we had little three-legged stools for those who could sit on them, and we were using... we bought, because we had some money, we bought an electric stove to boil water on to make tea from Red Cross parcels. And we weren't supposed to have this stove, and one day the lieutenant came in, and he was so mad at seeing us using a stove, he kicked one of the stools and kicked it clean through the window, broke the window. I mean, just a case of temper.
Was there any basing of the Italians on the part of the POWs?
No. Not that I know of. No, I mean, we kept ourselves to ourselves as much as possible.
Who were the... do you remember the names of any of the other British people you were with?
Oh, yes. I mean, in going round the room was Bill van der Linde, who is a tank sergeant. And then there was me. Then there was Adrian Charlton, another tank sergeant, who I shall be going to see on Sunday. Then there was Bert Wilson, who was a sergeant hurricane pilot, who was the chap who came down in Malta, as I mentioned some little while ago. He died about 3 years ago from kidney disease, but his wife was on the phone last night, and he's just had a book published about his experiences. There was Jack Lang, who was in the County of London Yeomanry tanks. He died some years ago. There was Norman Price, who was a bowfighter pilot, who is still living in Reading. We keep in touch. There was Cliff Cornell, who was the Australian fighter pilot who was killed in Australia when he went back. There was Jerry Sampson, who was a sergeant in the Remies, who I saw in Cornwall last year. There was Louis Spilsbury, a Canadian air gunner, who went back to Canada, and I don't know what happened to him. I think he might have died. There was a Sergeant Davis of the Essex Regiment, who was much older than we were and is obviously dead. There was a chap named Alan Blackwell, who was in the Royal Artillery, lived in Mould. I don't know what's happened to him. There was a chap named Gerber, who was a South African, who went back to Johannesburg, and that was last we heard of him. And then there was a Sergeant Butler, who was in the Rifle Brigade, who came back with us on repat and died, oh, I think about 10 years ago. But that's the room. Then there were others. There was an excellent padre, Bernard Pawley, who subsequently became the Archdeacon of Canterbury, and I kept in touch with him over many years. In fact, I'm still in touch with his widow. He died 4 years ago? No, a bit longer than that, I think. But because I've always been a practicing Anglican anyway, he and I got on very well together. And in fact, when the Archbishop of Canterbury, Dr. Coggan, was enthroned, Bernard Pawley arranged for me to be given absolutely VIP treatment at the enthronement. I was sitting right in the very front of everybody. But he was an excellent padre. And there were, a lot of others. I'm blessed with a reasonably good memory.
Yes, you are.